Hello and welcome back to yet another episode of the VC Bruno podcast, a podcast that provides a unique perspective of the startup world through the lens of venture capitalists and entrepreneurs. I'm your host Digjay, and today I have with me Sanjay Swamy, managing partner at Prime Venture Partners, which is an early stage VC fund focused on backing category creating tech companies out of India, building for the local and global markets. Prime has a portfolio of 25 companies, which includes startups like Reco, MyGate, MoneyTap, and Dozy. An entrepreneur turned investor, Sanjay, along with his co-founders, started Prime Venture Partners in 2012. Prior to starting Prime, Sanjay co-founded ZipDial, which was later acquired by Twitter, and also worked across different roles at companies like MCheck, EasyTap, Xerox, and Portal Software. Sanjay is also a volunteer at iSpirit and played a prominent role on the Aadhaar project under the leadership of Nandan Nilekani. In this episode, Sanjay talks about his journey as an entrepreneur and now as a VC, the genesis story and investment philosophy at Prime, adding value as an operator VC, finding investor founder fit, identifying and backing category creating startups, and the VC founder relationship at Prime. I had a lot of takeaways from my chat with Sanjay on all things startups and VC. I hope you enjoy this discussion as well. So, without much ado, let's dive in and find out what Sanjay has to share. Hey Sanjay, welcome to the VC Pruner podcast. Very excited to have you with us today.
Thanks, Digjay. Very nice to be here as well. Thanks for hosting me.
Awesome. So, you know, for those who don't know you yet, maybe we can start with a brief intro and your path to entrepreneurship and then to VC.
Yeah, given that I'm on the other side of 55, you know, that might be a little long. So I'll try to make this crisp and short. But I still see myself as an entrepreneur to start with. And we, both my partners and I, see Prime as our startup. The business we are in is in venture capital. But, you know, really, we think we are entrepreneurs and this is our startup. And that's how we'd like to be seen. Having said that, you know, quick introduction of myself and similar introductions to my partners. You know, we're three partners. All of us grew up in India, did our undergrads here, did our masters in the US. I did a small stopover in France on the way to the US, did another master's there. And all of this was in the late 80s, early 90s. And then all happened to work in Silicon Valley in the 90s and early 2000 during the dot-com boom and the crash in 2001 and saw all of that. We didn't know each other per se, but we happened to be, you know, in the same part of the world and lived that same, you know, first wave of the internet. All three of us came back in early 2000s and somewhere along the way we met and, you know, initially Shripati and I with another partner. And then after that, Amit joined us in Fund 2. But quickly, my journey, we grew up in a small town in Orissa till I was 10. Dad was in the DHL factory there and then in Bangalore. And you know, grew up through a middle-class family, you know, very strong core values of, you know, don't take things for granted. Education is the only thing you can rely on and hard work. And I think that has stayed consistent set-wise throughout. I got an opportunity, a fellowship to go to France for a couple of years, did a master's in avionics in the National Aerospace School in Toulouse called Cipaero. And then moved to University of Washington, Seattle for a second master's in flight control systems. Never really worked in the area. My first job was from 92 to 99 in Silicon Valley in a firm called Integrated Systems that was started by the Nexus founder, Dr. Naren Gupta. So I had worked in his startup. Did a lot of sales, marketing, business development, but I never did really pure product engineering. And then subsequently spent a year at Xerox PARC. Came back to India in 2004 after I'd been laid off of the dot-com era. And I went through that experience. And coincidentally, my wife had also had quit 6 months earlier because her company had gone through an IPO. And it was a very rough period of time. You know, none of this is necessarily told by people, but these are the realities of all our lives. 92, finding a job in the recession was the hardest time. And then 2003, I went through being laid off. Came back to India in 2003, actually more on a holiday. And, you know, while I was here, I noticed a gentleman, an auto driver, and I asked him, you know, time kya hua? And he pulled out his cell phone and read the time out to me. And that was the time when Reliance had just launched. And it hit me then that he has a network connected device and we could send him a payment. right? And so then I quickly did some research on it, and it looked like the right thing. And so we moved to India with the idea of getting into the mobile payments business, right? So that was always the goal. I moved to India for a soft landing with an American firm called Mportal, helped them set up their India ops, and then set up India ops for a Kleiner startup called Katera. And that had some amazing startups that came out of the initial team. It was one of the really high quality teams that we set up in Bangalore in 2004 to 2006. And then I got invited by Rajesh Jain and DFJ to come and run MCheck. And that's how I got into the formally into the mobile payments. So I had been talking to Rajesh about my idea, and he coincidentally, you know, was doing an investment in MCheck. And MCheck was like the most incredible learning I could have gotten, you know, in terms of all aspects of organization building, startup building, telecom industry, the banking industry, the regulatory environments in all of those. The whole aspect of the mobile phone, mobile industry, which, you know, was still on Nokia 1100, 1200 phones, but we're seeing a little bit of the early Java, you know, phones that were coming out. We had a lot of traction, but I wouldn't say success with MCheck, involved with, you know, really the first versions of the mobile banking guidelines and things like that in India. I've written some chapters of that myself. My team was deeply involved in framing what eventually became IMPS and things like that. But ultimately, you know, it was clear after 3-4 years that despite all the distribution we had, just getting the banking system and the telecom industry to work together in what is today the same architecture as Apple Pay, right? The tokenized card and so on. It was a bit too early, and, you know, KYC and stuff was also quite a challenge. And I probably made a lot of mistakes as an entrepreneur as well. So 2010, I left, and that's when sort of started three things in parallel. One was ZipDial, along with Valerie and Amia. The second was EasyTap, which is interesting. EasyTap was started in the fourth bedroom of a four-bedroom house, which was hosting ZipDial. But I also had reached out to the Aadhaar team. I had written a blog about how the SIM card could be used, perhaps, as the ID. And then decided to volunteer with it. Nandan was gracious enough and said, "You're field experience with MCheck and some of the failures you had there will be very valuable here." And so that's how I got involved with that program for about 12 to 18 months. And after that, we decided to start what is now Prime Ventures. So that's sort of the long journey to that point. And, you know, being very fortunate, I would say, you know, lots of ups and downs and restarts. So I restarted my career in 92, of course, was a start. Then 2002, after 10 years in the Valley, and then, you know, reset, moved to India. Then 2007 happened, you know, it was like crazy time there. And then 2010, when I left, again, went literally 3-4 years without a paycheck as we started Prime, right? So I've seen that ups and downs in careers. Everybody imagines that it's a linear or exponential growth of one's careers. That's not how it really happens, at least wasn't in my case. But I think every time you learn a lot. So that's sort of a quick snapshot. I'm sorry, you know, it takes a lot just because of how old I am.
No, I love it. And, you know, it has been a very interesting roller coaster ride, and I can sense that element of adaptability and risk-taking appetite, which is crucial and which brings in that entrepreneurial spirit that you were talking about. And there's so much that, you know, I want to tap into from that experience. But I want to start off by talking about Prime and the genesis behind starting Prime Ventures in the first place.
Yeah, I think what we felt was that, you know, Silicon Valley, we were exposed to it in the 90s, right? And that's when the first wave of the internet boom happened. But, you know, the West kind of got the internet to make their lives more comfortable. Whereas in India, you know, it's almost the means to enabling people to have a, you know, a better life, not even necessarily a comfortable life, right? So if it felt like it was a vitamin there that was, you know, making you healthier and stronger, it felt like this is like a power aspirin here, right? And so it really felt like we were going to get an opportunity to relive what we lived in the Valley in the 90s. And so that was one where we felt there was just going to be a massive opportunity that was going to come up here, right? The second thing was that I think we felt India kind of had this proprietor mindset till then for most of the companies. And on the technology side, really the first wave were the services companies, right? That were building products. And what they were doing is creating a massive talent pool in India. But India itself was almost never the target market. And the mindset of innovating to build your own products was just getting started here. And so we felt that was a way we could tap into, because the quality of the talent was there, the opportunity was there, and we bring in our Silicon Valley experience, and that could be like the and capital that could be the perfect storm. But we also felt right from the beginning that we aren't really investors as much as we are company builders. And the phase of the companies that are the most exciting are the early phase, right? When it's a blank sheet of paper, you can imagine anything and everything, including the product, the business model, and what have you, right? How should the team be structured? What should the target market be, et cetera? The moment you get into a Series A or a Series B, it's becoming more and more defined.
Yeah.
And so we felt that the out-of-the-box opportunities are really going to be in the very, very early stage. And I have deep, deep respect for, you know, what some of our peers have achieved in the same period of time. But we took an approach saying, look, the value is really in our time, not so much necessarily the money, although that's sort of an important ingredient, right? And so if we have to deliver value to these companies and have, you know, spend quality time with them, we can't do too many companies, right? So right from the beginning, we took an approach of saying, look, it'll be 3 to 5 deals per year, and it'll be sort of a concentrated approach. And let's actually look at an approach where we are close enough, but far enough, right? So I always tell entrepreneurs, look, we're not the guy at the gas station. We're in the car, but we're in the backseat, right? And we might give you some guidance and things like that, but you're the one driving. And you know, I can keep telling you, go left, left, left. If you want to go right, you will go right, right? It's your call. Sort of some crude analogies. But broadly, you know, if we have more context, right, we can give more value, right? That has always been our theme. And one very important thing for us has been that all of us have different experience and expertise, and we want our startups to get the union of those, not the experience of the one partner you might end up having as your lead partner, right? Which can only happen in a small fund. It can't happen in a very large, it's not a super scalable model. It's quite a cottage industry in that sense. So that was sort of been our, that has been our philosophy.
Got it. So, you know, you mentioned this very interesting aspect about all three of you coming from an operator background and trying to bring that value add and bring that context, more importantly, to founders who are, you know, just starting their own journey. So how do you think about that in terms of, you know, the areas of business that you all individually like to add value to the startups you are funding now? And what should be the expectation of founders that are coming to Prime for fundraising? I mean, beyond the capital itself.
So I think, and obviously it has evolved a lot, right? I think right from the beginning, one thing we were very clear about is we don't make decisions, right? I always tell founders in the first meeting with them, look, we will disagree, disapprove, dispute, discuss, debate, but we will never decide, right? That's your call, right? We'll guide, you know, we can give you all the advice we think makes sense, but frankly, it's your business, right? And you're the one that's at the 1 foot level. We might be at the 1,000 foot level as opposed to others who might be at the 10,000 foot level, which means we may have a little more context to give you some, you know, quality advice and guidance, but really it's not our business, it's yours, right? And you have to write the chapter there. So our view is, you know, we won't make decisions, but we're happy to work closely with the founders. Now, each of us has different areas of experience, right? I would like to believe I have a very strong intuitive sense for, you know, marketing, positioning, you know, and so on. Sripathi is amazing when it comes to operations side of things. Amit is probably one of the best product people you'll find in the world, certainly in India. And companies sometimes need help in multiple areas. And part of it might just be, you know, getting the team together and helping hire with the right people, right? Because we don't want to be doing in year three what we had to do in year one to help the company around, right? So a lot of it is really how do you think about the organization and hire and what should the priorities be? How do you think about the business model? What metrics should you be tracking? And how do you know things are really working well? You know, are you tracking the engagement correctly? Is NPS the right metric? Is HXC the right metric? All these things, right? And our fundamental belief is that founders are not insecure. You know, making the company successful is the most important thing. We are the closest confidants to be able to guide them, but also show them the mirror from time to time and say, look, this is not working,
yeah,
right? So medicine is sometimes bitter, but it's needed. You need to first have willingness to diagnose before you can actually try to cure a problem, right? So, and hopefully, you know, there's enough of preventive care that we can help with as well. So these are, you know, sort of some of the areas where we think we like to engage in. Now, in terms of the other part of your question of when people first meet us, right, we are extremely thorough in our way we try to work with companies, right? And that's really because we are also high conviction investors. If we want to back a company, we're either all in or we're not in, right? So we will never say, or I shouldn't say never, but we will rarely say, you know, here's a small check, you know, go figure out something. And then if it works, we'll jump in, right? So that's not our style at all. We've done one or two like that, but it's more situational. Otherwise, for the most part, we want to do our, you know, but if I have to be all in, that means I'm not doing something else. And I want to have a clear understanding of what are the knowns, what are the unknowns, can we work well with the founder, right? And I jokingly tell founders, look, this is a relationship, the first investor and the entrepreneur, which is harder to get out of than marriage, right? Because, you know, when there are other people's lives, other people's careers, other people's money at stake here, whether we like each other or not, we're going to have to work together for 6-7 years, most likely, right? So be very sure of who you're getting as your first investor. And as investors in general, right? I mean, there's no right or wrong as such. It's just that, you know, it may not be compatible, right? And so people are generally good people, but, you know, a fit is very important there. And it's not just the valuation and the equity they take, et cetera, right? It is really more about, can we work closely together, right? So the process at Prime is really geared around, you know, there's of course the standard stuff, team, time, you know, timing, all of that stuff, right? But really getting to understand, because what I tell founders is, whatever you've sent me in that Excel sheet of your projections, there's only one thing we know for a fact, that that's not going to happen, right? We don't know what's going to happen, but that sheet is not going to happen. Right? That's for sure. So the question is really, how do we trust the thought process here? How did you arrive at these? What are the assumptions you made? What happens if this goes wrong? What happens if that goes wrong? How would you react to the situation, et cetera? And that's really getting to know each other and say, you know, are we on the same wavelength, right? Are we going to handle the problem or the deviation that happens in a clever manner? You might get the opportunity, might be 10 times bigger, right? So why are we even stuck with this, right? Are you going to be open to that if that opportunity were to arise sooner rather than later? And we've seen that several times in our, you know, companies where the business today looks quite different from what they pitched. Thank God, right? It's substantially better than what they had pitched us at the time. These are some things that we look for in terms of what's the, you know, we give a small assignment really to see, you know, are the founders open to, you know, thinking differently? You know, what if this were to happen kind of a thing? It's not saying that that's going to happen and that's the right thing to do, right? Because as you know, a startup goes through lots of ups and downs, lots of left and right turns. The general direction almost always remains the same. Otherwise, it's called a pivot. But, you know, it isn't a linear path. And how can you deal with it is what we're trying to gauge. And can we work on this together, you know, assuming things go wrong? And more things go wrong than right? Yeah. In the grand scheme of things, especially early on.
And that's really interesting because, you know, now as we're seeing more and more capital come in, capital is getting commoditized. And what founders are really looking for is the term value add. And very important element when you bring in an investor is, how can he, you know, help you think differently? Like you said, you know, the diagnosis is important and being open to different possibilities, which is inevitable in a startup. Like you said, it's not a linear journey. So just being open to that. And with Prime, three partners working together, which is also, you know, a slightly different model. You don't see that with all VC funds. So I think that's really interesting for, you know, first-time founders that are looking for funding and looking for that value add that they want their investors to bring in. So Sanjay, you mentioned, you know, you started your first fund in 2012 and you've come a long way, right? From the time when it was an 8 million fund. So what adjustments and changes have you made yourself, you know, in your investment style since you started that first fund?
So I would be amiss in saying that nothing has changed, but I would actually like to believe that nothing has changed. In the sense that definitely, you know, because of scale and things like that, and because of a lot of learnings, as well as the market has evolved, certain things have changed. But what we stand for in terms of, you know, working closely with the founders on category creating companies that are solving real problems for India with, you know, with first order business models, almost that remains constant throughout, right? So looking at it from how you look at Prime from above, from say an LP perspective, it's exactly the same strategy from day zero, right? It hasn't changed at all. It has certainly adapted to the market changes, but the strategy and the focus has not changed and our value prop to founders has not changed. And having said that, certainly there's a lot more maturity in the market, right? So something that we had to do in 2012, now there are, you know, blogs and videos and stuff like that. Founders are already aware of a lot of this stuff. So the focus can be much more on the opportunity, on the business, on the team building and so on. So certainly the evaluation process has changed a bit. You know, I in fact have written a blog called the Circa blog, right? The Circa problem. Because if in 2015, if you started a company and if it got to say, you know, $1 million of revenue in 2 years, you know, you were doing very, very well, right? Now we're seeing companies getting there in, you know, in under 12 months, sometimes in 6 months, right? So if you're a founder that started in 2015 and you're looking at all these young startups that are racing past you, they actually are racing past you, right? And you need to keep recalibrating and saying, you know, what I thought was good then is not that impressive anymore, because when you're competing for follow-on dollars, you're competing with these young punks who are actually growing, you know, at a different rate of growth, right? So the same way, of course, we also obviously have to adapt from that perspective. What has also changed is we now have a lot of, you know, second-time founders. And I'm not talking about the Kunal Shahs and the Nitin Guptas and stuff who have sort of had a very successful first one. There are a handful of those as well. There are actually several who either worked at the large companies, you know, someone who worked with Kunal, say, at Recharge or at with Vijay at Paytm, or someone who worked at Ola or, you know, Flipkart. They've seen as close to firsthand without having been the entrepreneur themselves, right? So that's one set of experiences that they have. And then you see a whole bunch of people who did try to do their own startups and did not succeed and made some mistakes, right? I never used to like to use the word failure, because actually you learn a lot when things go wrong. So I always say unsuccessful startups versus failed startups. And those founders, very interestingly, actually, I thought when we were, you know, as the market evolved, that first-time founders would care about the quote-unquote value add that we provide. But it actually, more often than not, is a second-time founder, because they actually look at us and say, oh my gosh, I wish I had some of this help the first time around, right? So that has ended up being, and I think about half of our companies now are second-time founders who've had either a moderate success or, you know, shut down and restarted. And so, you know, the market has changed, right? You're seeing a lot of that dynamic, a lot of service providers. There's a lot more capital, of course, in the market as well. But I don't actually believe there is, as a ratio, I think it was easier to get capital in 2012 than it is now, because the amount of capital that has come in is no way proportionate, has not grown proportionately in the early stages to the number of companies that are out there, right? So, and quality deals are few and far between even now, right? Quality opportunities. So I think it's very exciting time in that sense, because the number of entrepreneurs has increased, but it is, you know, from our perspective, it remains the same and is just as excited as we were in the beginning.
Right. Got it. And you mentioned, right, you're looking for category creating startups right from the beginning when you started the fund, and it gets more and more difficult, you know, to replicate that decision-making to spot, you know, the startups that are still creating those new categories. So before we get into the framework, could you highlight some startups within your portfolio, you know, for the benefit of the audience that you think have created, you know, very unique categories?
Right. So the first one I'll talk about is MyGate. Nothing like that existed. Nothing that even now, right? And in other parts of the world, it's not like you could look to the US or to China and say this sort of company should exist. I remember when we first backed the company, a lot of VCs asked me, you know, is my bada company kaise banaoge, right? And I said, I don't know, but it definitely seems like if, you know, this is how the world is going to look. And if they pull it off, you know, I can think of a lot of interesting ways. We did have obviously a lot more belief that the founders had played out this, you know, second and third order type of business opportunity. And I can't imagine today living in a gated community without having MyGate, right? I mean, it's just become such a core fabric of thing. But also they were very special founders. You know, they understood the responsibility they were taking on. Vijay is an Air Force pilot, you know, Shaurya Chakra decorated in person for, I don't know if you know his story, but you should definitely bring him on your podcast and have him talk about that. He basically flew a sortie, you know, during the tsunami in Karnikubar and saved a couple of hundred people with another pilot.
Wow.
People like that, you know, we felt really very special people, right? And what they do at MyGate, you know, really we could see this. Oh wow, this would really solve some simple problems that I was experiencing, right? And of course, the biggest part is really not in the category creating or anything. The fact that they've executed brilliantly, right? That was a leap of faith we had to make. Another one I'll just give you recently, a company called Dozy that's doing, you know, remote vitals monitoring, you know, for hospitals and at home as well. And it has some really proprietary technology. But, you know, when you look at the technology, you know, it's contactless. You know, they're able to measure, you know, heart rate and breathing rate, blood pressure, etc. It's incredible to have this stuff at, you know, such, you know, a low price point. It's a clearly global product. Nothing like this exists anywhere in the world, right? So that's truly category creating, right? And why do we pick category creating is the real question. And whether you look at Neo or Credex or Wheels Eye or MoneyTap or all of these, in their own way, they're all category creating. There may be a lot of companies that have copied them now, but at least when we backed them, they were the first of the kind, and at least in India. So our belief is, first of all, there's no fun in failing at something somebody else has already succeeded at, right? So, you know, I always tell founders, why would you want to fail when somebody has shown you the way, right? The second and most important thing is, I feel, is that the follower is chasing the category creator. And there is a reason why a category creator has made certain decisions, which you are only seeing from the outside, You don't know the thought process that went into why they came to this decision, right? So if they make a left turn and you're saying, well, you know, they said go left, so I'm going left. But I, as the category creator, may have said, if I go left and if I hit a dead end, then I know it was a mistake, right? Or if I see a pothole, I know it's a mistake and I must do a U-turn. You don't know that. You might go through that pothole, right? The only the category creator, I mean, by the way, there might be a better pot of gold on that side and you could get lucky, but the category creator has thought through all of these scenarios, whereas the follower is only seeing, you know, up to a certain point. And we've seen that time and time again when companies have tried to compete. The third thing is that I think the category creator, if you're solving a real problem, your customers are much more forgiving to you because they're looking at it saying, look, if you, I don't mind that this product is not working well because nobody else is solving this problem for me. So you do get a second chance if you're a category creator. Not that you necessarily should look for it, but you do get that second chance. Whereas you don't get that second chance if you're the follower because they'll immediately switch to the category creator. Somebody's ahead of you, right? And last but not least, I find, and with category creating comes, you know, the possibility of building an enormous company. And I actually feel it's easier to build a large company than to build a small company. And I think when you're aiming to solve a very large problem and build a large company, the world conspires to work with you and make you successful. Nobody's going to say, oh, he's going to build a small company. Let's all help him do that, right? But if you're saying this guy's aiming to do something crazy, which nobody has done before, a lot of people are going to try to help you do it because they know that it's a better state to the current, right? So that's why we feel category creating is a core part. And maintaining that as our culture at Prime is, we think, very important to us as well.
Amazing. I think you might have given away some hacks for a lot of, you know, young VCs that are now starting their journeys. And it's easier to, you know, think about it in theory, but very difficult to execute. How do you train yourself to constantly pick those category creators and constantly pick the right founders every time?
I don't know if there is as much of a science there. So certainly one obvious thing is anybody else doing this already? That's one that's sort of a bit of a red flag for us. But having said that, I think founders who are category creators will talk more about the problem than their product because they're truly passionate about solving the problem and they have a starting point, but they're not like obsessing about this is the only way to do it because the goal is to solve the problem, right? So that's one thing that I look for a lot. How much are you talking about the problem and how much have you internalized the problem? How much do you know who your real customer is and so on? So that is a critical piece. The second piece also is assuming you are successful. Is this like substantially better state than the current? And I often ask founders, you know, I'm not even questioning how you're going to build this company, right? Is it worth building this company? That is the biggest question I ask, right? And that means that for somebody, all the existing solutions, you know, are going to give them some incremental benefit versus this one, which is going to give you a step function benefit, right? And it's going to transform your lives, right? Because I always believe, you know, entrepreneurs are really motivated by making the world a better place for others, right? It's not about the financial success. Financial success to me is an outcome. It's not a goal. Whenever it's a goal, you never catch it. Whenever you forget about it and focus on doing the right things, you have a better chance of getting it. It might still not come, right? But you know, it's always an outcome. It's never a goal, right? So what is motivating the founder here, right? Is it about solving this massive problem? Or is it about saying, oh yeah, this thing, and then our valuation will be X, and then it'll be 5X, and then it'll be 15X, right? That is irrelevant to me. So I think if you look for that, that part of the pattern matching is actually quite replicable. The actual solution itself, you know, that requires a lot of intellectual curiosity. And you really have to go and, you know, have be willing. And I mean, we have funded a company that's doing treasury management for cooperative banks in India. We had to go to these, you know, cooperative banks and actually, you know, fly to Pune, take a bus to Kolhapur, and then walk 100 meters to go meet with the banker and ask them, you know, tell me why this is such a big problem for you. Because nowadays with the COVID, we've all moved all of this to Zoom. But actually asking, you know, 20 questions there, understanding their business, understanding what has this founder realized as an insight, right? Which is hopefully a 10X insight. That is not so obvious, even for the guy who's going to copy. That's very important for us to understand, right? So it's the motivations of the founders, the understanding of the problem, that unique insight that they have. And the insight might be on business model, it might be on distribution, or it might be on product or some combination of these. But that's very important for us to try to understand. And that's what we look for. I would say, you know, there is certainly a lot of pattern matching from a structural perspective, right? But the problem and the solution, the problem that they're trying to solve will be unique, of course.
Yeah, no, very interesting and some very good points in, you know, just thinking about picking a startup that you want to back. just over-indexing on how closely the founder is thinking about the problem and how deep, you know, one can go, irrespective of the path, you know, it could be defined, undefined. And that's the business of VC, right? You're ready to back a founder and explore, find out the unknowns at the beginning of their journey.
See, my view here, honestly, is for a founder, right? It's their life.
Correct.
Right? For us, it's one of N investments we're going to make. My biggest problem with the founder is, you know, is it worth 7 years of your life, right? It had better be worth it. Because if you take the risk and reward and probabilities of this turning into something big, et cetera, the dice is loaded against the founder. Despite all that, if you're going to do it, there better be a small chance in hell that you're going to pull off a massive outcome. That's the only time it's worth it, right? I always ask the founders, is this worth your time? Right? 7 years of your life, think about it. And if it really is, you should do it. Right? I mean, the number of times people told us Zipdial was a stupid idea is not even funny. But hey, you know, we were passionate about it and we made something out of it.
So. Yeah, no, definitely a critical question for all founders to ask themselves before embarking on that journey. So Sanjay, you've spent more than a decade in VC now, and based on your experience and learnings, you know, what is some advice that you would, you know, give to yourself if you were to start a VC fund today and to a lot of young micro VCs that are, you know, embarking on this journey?
That's a good question. So I think certainly, you know, as you're starting in, you need to have some USP, right? Whatever that USP might be, right? It could be I make a decision in a week. It could be my first check is very quick. It could be that I'm the expert in SaaS or I'm the expert in EV. But VC is a get-rich-slow scheme. It is not a get-rich-fast scheme. So as a VC, one needs to be prepared for that. It's going to be probably 8-10 years before you see any real returns. And you should be okay with it. And your backers should be okay with it. We were very fortunate to have some very long-term capital backing us. And so, you know, we can place some of these longer-term concentrated portfolio bets. You know, in the beginning, when you're starting out, it's like, you know, whoever's got a check, you know, we're really happy to take it. But over time, you try to get selective. But I think the biggest thing is patience. And don't be also in too much of a hurry to pull the trigger and write a check. We did our first investment probably 18 months after we closed the first fund. And we went without a paycheck for that time. That was the right thing to do at the time. So you have to be patient, you know. But we found some really amazing companies that we eventually backed them. And we also got to learn the business a little bit, right? Now, there are two ways. One is you say, look, I'll write a number of small checks and I'll get to learn the business. But we always felt that it's better not to have a portfolio than to have a not so great portfolio. So that's why we said we'll just wait for some time and wait it out. And the second thing I would say also is, this is a business of incredible trust with the founders and transparency, right? We are very fortunate at Prime. The relationship we've got with our founders, they pick up the phone and call us at 3 a.m. if they needed to, right? And that's the nature of the relationship we have with them. And so I don't feel like they're hiding anything from me and so on. And they also actually are, sometimes when they talk to their friends who are also entrepreneurs, you know, and I mean, their friends are, how do you even have these conversations with your investor, right? And the relationship that I have with hardly an investor to portfolio company, it's more of, you know, we're in this together and, you know, we're not judging each other anymore. We're rowing to the whatever we see as the next destination. And how fast can I help you get there? And, you know, I think that's very important to establish with founders as well, right? Empathy for them. That is the nature of the relationship, you know, you want to have with your founders. So those are the, I would say, two big things. Everything else sorts itself out. But, you know, pick something that you're really good at. That's your USP. Get into that. Build a relationship of complete transparency and, you know, confidence with the founders. And always be there to just help them succeed in any which way. You know, the number of things we have done which have nothing to do with what a VC would do, right? I mean, half the time I'll be sitting and editing PowerPoint slides and stuff like that. But, you know, it's okay. You know, it's if they succeed, we succeed. That's all that matters, right?
Sanjay, this has been one amazing conversation on all things VCs and startups. And I'm sure a lot of new VCs, angel investors who are starting their journey are going to learn a lot.
So I just wanted to make one point on that. You know, this is a business of, it's an ecosystem here. As I said, there's never enough.
Yep.
And there's never going to be too much from the VC side of things. So we try to be as open and transparent about what we do, happy to share, you know, both with any of your listeners, if there are some tips, you know, our finance team, sometimes how things are structured and all that stuff. So we really think it's an ecosystem game here. None of us is going to have to beat the other one. You know, it's, we're building an ecosystem here. So absolutely happy to help.
No, absolutely appreciate that. And we need more of that, especially as we are, you know, seeing early days of maturity in the ecosystem, having more awareness, just learning from those who've already been there, done that. you know, is the goal of this podcast as well, when we try to bring in, you know, people who've been in the trenches like yourself. So yeah, really appreciate you saying that. And yeah, with that, moving on to a rapid fire, I'll shoot some questions and hope to get your honest, immediate thoughts on the same.
Okay, we'll try.
First question, one thing that you'd like to change to improve the state of the Indian startup ecosystem today?
Well, the hot topic around the world is SPACs. You know, I'd love to see a framework for SPACs in India. And I heard rumors that it's in the thought process. So I hope that comes out soon.
Interesting. Yeah, we all look forward to that if that becomes a reality.
Yep, why not?
Next question, if you had to give a TED talk, what topic would you choose and why?
You know, I ask all founders when they're pitching us also, say, okay, go back and, you know, assume it's 2025 and either you've been very successful. I want to hear that TED talk, right? And you transform some industry, whatever the industry might be. So it's interesting that you've thrown the question to me. I still remember something my dad said, you know, years ago when I was in college, and he said, common sense isn't common. And it's so true in life, right? So that's probably my favorite topic that I would pick. Yeah, I don't know what I would say about it, but that's for another day. But I think that's a topic that summarizes a lot of how I feel about things.
VCs and founders from the ecosystem that you admire and look up to?
All of the above. Everyone, right? Everyone has some amazing strengths. I think by naming some, I would actually be doing justice to others. But every founder we interact with, whether we back them or not, I always feel I learn something, and I hope they learn something from every interaction. And every VC, you know, whether we sit in board meetings and what have you, again, we're building an ecosystem here. You know, there'll be certain aspects that might be competitive in our business, but broadly, the bigger opportunity is on the outside. And I learn a lot. So short answer is try to keep finding ways to improve with every one of those interactions.
Any final thoughts for founders, current and aspiring, that are listening to you right now?
You know, I think we have an incredible opportunity in India to fulfill our responsibility of helping the masses while making a fortune, right? And by giving ourselves an opportunity to make a fortune, right? I can't think of a better time to be an entrepreneur here. The opportunity to have incredible impact on people's lives, livelihoods, et cetera, while aligning it with your, you know, capitalistic objectives, right, has never been better in India than it is right now in India. Anybody who's sitting on the sidelines, you know, now, you know, you shouldn't. There's only one way you can partake in it, is by partaking in it, right? So, you know, if you want to get in, you know, and it'll never be easier, right? As life goes on, I've always found there will always be a new excuse that says why you can't do it today and why you should be doing it tomorrow, right? It doesn't reduce. The number of excuses goes up, right? So wherever you are, drop what you're doing. If you have something you're passionate about, get into it. And, you know, now is as good a time as any.
Awesome, Sanjay. This has been, you know, an incredible experience just listening to you and just hearing how, you know, you've been reflecting on your last decade of investing in startups. So thank you so much for doing this. Appreciate you taking our time. And yeah, hopefully we'll have you back on the pod sometime soon again.
It would be my pleasure. Thank you for hosting me. I've enjoyed the conversation as well. And all the best to all the listeners as well.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the VC Bruno podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please let a guest know about it, share your thoughts on social media, and let them know what were your key takeaways. We would truly appreciate if you could subscribe to our podcast on the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a review on Apple iTunes. This will help others discover the podcast. To get insights and to learn more about startups and venture capital, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We will love to hear from you there. You can find all episodes together on our website, thevcpreneur.com. We will be back again next week with another VCpreneur that is making a dent in the venture universe. Until then, take care and keep shining.